Welcome to Five Books for Catholics, where an expert selects and explains five outstanding books on some aspect of Catholic life, doctrine, or culture. Johann Sebastian Bach, 1685 to 1750, is one of the greatest Western composers. Bach composed various passions, that is, sacred oratorios that set the gospel narrative of Christ's passion to music. Two of Bach's passions are extant: the St. John Passion, Bach Werkebezeichnis 245, and the St. Matthew Passion, Bach Werkebezeichnis 244. The St. John Passion was first performed in Leipzig on Good Friday, 1724, and later Bach revised it extensively. The St. Matthew Passion was first performed in Leipzig on Good Friday, 1727, and revised between 1743 and 1746. In addition to the text of the Gospel, the libretto of each Passion contains verses that dramatize or meditate upon episodes of our Lord's Passion. These two Passions by Bach are now treasured as two of his greatest compositions and performed frequently throughout the world. Moreover, it was Felix Mendelssohn's performance of St. Matthew Passion in 1829 that brought Bach to his current prominence. In this episode, Daniel R. Melamed discusses Bach's passions and some of the best literature on them. Daniel R. Melamed is professor of music in musicology at the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music. His research focuses on Johann Sebastian Bach, Mozart-era opera, and music of the 17th and 18th centuries. He is president of the American Bach Society and director of the Bloomington Bach Cantata Project. He has authored Listening to Bach, The Mass in B Minor and the Christmas Oratorio, Hearing Bach's Passions, and Johann Sebastian Bach and the German Motet. And with Michael Marisen, he has co-authored An Introduction to Bach Studies. He is also editor of Bach Studies 2 and Bach Perspectives 8, Johann Sebastian Bach and the Oratorio. Professor Daniel Melamed, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We're going to talk about Bach's passions. How many passions did Bach actually write, and how many are extant?
That's been a question that's interested Bach enthusiasts and Bach scholars for a long time. We are certain of three passions that he composed: the St. John Passion, first performed in 1724, so observing its 300th anniversary; the St. Matthew Passion, composed and first performed in 1727, and then a passion according to St. Mark, probably from 1731. Of those three, the John and Matthew Passions each survive, in fact, in multiple versions each. We can take some pretty good guesses about the music of the Mark Passion, because we're pretty sure Bach reused some music from other pieces that do survive. But for most practical purposes, the Mark Passion is lost. There is a theory among some Bach scholars that early in his career, Bach composed another passion that no longer survives. It's claimed that he did this during the time he worked at the court of Weimar, so it's sometimes known as the Weimar Passion. I have to say that I fall on the skeptical side of evidence that suggests he might have done such a thing. There is yet another piece, a passion setting according to St. Luke, that we know was in Bach's music library, but it's pretty clearly not a piece that he composed. It belongs to a category of passion settings that Bach knew about and owned, and in some documented cases, performed in the liturgy. So we know about three that he composed for sure, two of which survive.
And who wrote the libretto for each of Bach's two extant passions?
I can answer half that question. To write the libretto of a passion setting is to take the gospel narrative of the chosen evangelist and to ornament it with stanzas from chorales, from German hymns, chosen for their relevance to particular moments in the story, and to ornament it with newly written poetry designed to be said as modern operatic types, recitatives and arias. So the person responsible for writing a passion libretto is doing a combination of assembling and new writing. In the case of the St. John Passion, we do not know who the librettist was. For the St. Matthew Passion, we know that it was a Leipzig poet and frequent collaborator with Bach, Christian Friedrich Henrici, who wrote under the pen name Picander. And we know this from a couple of different sources. He was also the librettist for the lost St. Mark Passion. But we don't know about the St. John Passion, even though there's been a recent theory that, once again, I don't think is correct, that it was a particular theologian, but the evidence for that seems to me to be weak at best.
Did Bach treat his sacred music as works in progress to be adapted for each performance, or did he establish a definitive score for each of these works?
We know hardly a piece that Bach is known to have performed more than once that went untouched somehow. Whether you regard this as an artistic matter, that pieces he regarded as works in progress or things he was seeking to change and improve, or whether you regard it as a practical matter, fitting a piece to the particular occasion and forces and circumstances of a given performance, is a really interesting question. It might be a kind of aesthetic and philosophical question. In some cases, you see Bach making changes and adaptations because available forces had changed somehow. Such and such an instrument wasn't available, so here's a substitute part to be played by the player of a different instrument to fill a gap. On the other hand, the passions are an example, especially the St. John Passion, are a really good example of a piece that Bach adapted both for available forces and for other reasons, and perhaps also for artistic reasons. As he performed the John Passion at least four times over the time he worked in Leipzig from 1723 to his death in 1750, Bach made changes in scoring and instrumentation, but he, and presumably a librettist, also made changes in the text a couple of different times, partly to adapt the piece to different theological settings, different ways of having the congregation think about the passion setting. That said, when Bach got around to making himself a new copy of the score of his St. John Passion, at least he started that project, as he made the new copy, he clearly was not content just to leave the musical readings the same. He undertook revisions of various kinds. So the St. John Passion is a terrific, if very complicated, example of Bach making changes in pieces over the years for every conceivable reason.
Bach was a Lutheran. He wrote music for Lutheran services. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't hold Catholicism in high regard. Nevertheless, some of his music is used in Catholic services, some chorales in many countries. And a Catholic who says, I don't want to listen to Bach because he was Lutheran, that's about like saying a Protestant shouldn't like look at Michelangelo's paintings because of Protestant. What were Bach's views about Catholicism?
That's a really difficult question to answer because we have nothing from Bach on the subject. And it's also a trap to look at the texts he set to music and to assume in a perhaps 19th century romantic way that this is somehow expressive of Bach's ideas or Bach's feelings. And when we look at a song setting by Robert Schumann, and certainly from, you know, some biographical context in Schumann's life, there's every reason to think that Schumann may be identifying with some of the ideas in those texts. It's an extreme view, but you have to allow for the possibility that Bach is a working church musician setting to music in the most effective way he knows how, texts that have been handed to him. Now, you have to lay over that the fact that we know from many different kinds of evidence that Bach was a well-educated and devout Lutheran of a particular Orthodox strain that fit very well in Lutheran Orthodox Leipzig, where he spent so many years working. And we also know that he had to be theologically examined in close detail to get that job in the first place as cantor of the St. Thomas School and city music director in Leipzig. And there were only certain correct answers to those theological questions. And then for good measure, as a term, one of the terms of his employment, he had to sign a copy of the 1530 Augsburg Confession, acknowledging Orthodox Lutheran theological points at their most basic. Does that tell us what Bach thought or believed? Probably, because he seems to have been a regular attender at services and taker of communion when it was offered. He does, in so many of his composing manuscripts, invoke divine help at the very top of the page, and at the very end of the page, write a little abbreviation that essentially gives thanks to the divine for the help in writing this music. There's every reason to think that Bach did, in fact, embrace then contemporary Lutheran ideas about all kinds of things, including Catholicism. And some of those ideas, going back to some of Martin Luther's own vitriol, as you and your listeners will certainly know, some of that was deeply anti-Catholic. The Catholic was, in fact, routinely referred to as the Antichrist, and there are Bach cantata texts that make casual reference to the Antichrist with the understanding that everybody in the congregation would know to make that association in modern day life with the head of the church in Rome. And there are hymns going back, especially to Luther's time, that invoke God's help in stemming the murderous tendencies both of the Turk and of the Pope. And so there is a lot of vitriol there. What Bach personally thought about it, I don't think we're in any position to say or ever will be. As for what we do with that today, that's a problem that's gotten a little bit less attention than some of the anti-Judaic sentiment that crops up in cantatas and most famously in the John Passion. But in a multicultural and occasionally ecumenical world, it's also a big question of what you do with anti-Catholic sentiment. It's a little difficult to pin on Bach unless you want to say Bach as a good early 18th century Lutheran who adhered to the tenets of Lutheranism is very likely to have understood those points of view as dogmatic.
And Bach was not the only composer of the period to write passions. There's also Handel's Broch's Passion, for example. Are Bach's passions in the same model as those of other composers of the period, or are they very different?
There are two different models by the time Bach is writing passions for the Lutheran liturgy in the first half of the 18th century. And all the passions he wrote fall into one particular model, so-called gospel passions, in which a singer intones the words of the gospel narrative. Other singers sing the first-person words of Jesus and other interlocutors in the story, and with instruments and both solo voices and ensemble voices, the story is ornamented, as I mentioned before, with recitatives and especially arias, a kind drawn poetically and musically from opera, designed to move the affections of the listener, to draw out emotional responses. So these are pieces constructed from gospel prose and from chorale stanzas and newly written poetry. There was another kind that had also grown up around the very same time, starting in the early years of the 18th century, in which the passion narrative, as well as the sort of commentary movements, were paraphrased in poetry. And these so-called poetic passions became almost a craze. And so when you look at a passion from the early 18th century, in the middle of the 18th century, the first thing you notice is whether it uses gospel text verbatim, or whether it paraphrases that, often in a highly emotional, poetic way. And so that the entire text that is heard is poetic. Bach's two surviving passions and the one we know about, the lost passion that we know about, were all of this gospel oratorio type. The Handel so-called Brockes passion you mentioned was Handel's setting of one of the earliest and certainly most famous poetic librettos, which was set to music by any number of really good composers, especially in the city of Hamburg. Now, for a very long time, we thought that the only kind of passion Bach was permitted to perform in Leipzig as part of the Good Friday liturgy was this gospel type of the kind he wrote and the kind represented by a couple other pieces in his repertory that we know he performed. But just a few years ago, a printed libretto turned up, no music, that can clearly, from a liturgical passion performed once or twice in Leipzig, a libretto that we can line up with one of these poetic passions by a very prolific and excellent contemporary, Gottfried Heinrich Stölzel. And so it's clear that at least on one occasion or two occasions, Bach performed one of these poetic passions. But as far as we know, he never wrote a piece of that sort.
That explains the difference in the types of genre, but musically, are Bach's passions very different from the other existing models? For example, John Elliott Gardner has remarked that though Bach was not a composer of opera, his passions are the greatest operatic composition of the whole Baroque period.
I guess it depends on what you mean by operatic. There is no question that at the time it was understood that to drop into a passion setting, or a Sunday church cantata for that matter, to drop in pieces of newly written poetry that were set for voice and instrument as arias was an operatic gesture. This is a kind borrowed from opera. The Hamburg theologian Neumeister, who wrote some of the very first weekly cantata texts of this type, that is, that used newly written poetry designed to be set operatically as solo recitatives and arias, said these are like little bits out of an opera. I mean, and another condition of Bach's employment that he agreed to was not to introduce music into the liturgy that was too operatic. What does that mean, given that by the time he gets there, pieces with this kind of operatic borrowing were already part of the accepted musical types that were in the liturgy? Now, I will say that the tradition of a passion of this kind, as opposed to a much simpler sort in with literal chanting, as opposed to solo singing of the gospel narrative, and very simple presentation of words of interlocutors in groups, that this new kind of passion represented by Bach had only been performed in the Leipzig liturgy for a couple of years before Bach took over. His predecessor, Johann Kuhnau, did this for 1 or 2 years, and maybe in the period between his death and Bach's appointment, which there was also a Good Friday that fell, maybe a third time. But this was new, and anything new, I think, in any religious tradition will have its share of people who think of it as not just new, but newfangled and objectionable. And there, in fact, were aesthetic debates about whether this music was too operatic or not. So for us to label this as the passions as opera, I suppose is possible, but would not have been an 18th century view. Some people would have thought they were operatic, Many people would have thought they were operatic. Some people would have thought that that was a good thing, because opera, in its ability to move the affections, was one of the ways to preach gospel and teach Lutheran thinking. Or if you were on the other side of the fence, it was somehow scandalous and unbecoming of a church musician to present in church. And I think we probably are going to get a little further with the problem if we think of it in 18th century terms.
And why, in your view, are Bach's passions great works of sacred music?
I have to say that one of the reasons is that they have proved to be so musically and aesthetically adaptable over the centuries. The way they tend to be performed now is very different from the way they were performed in Bach's time, both in context and in the sort of musical forces that present them. What people know as they come in and what they hope to get out of hearing a passion performance, that is one outside the liturgy. And I have to say that true liturgical performances of the passion in the liturgy are exceedingly rare. It's much more common to hear these pieces in concert performances. Whatever it is people are hoping to get from this, they seem to find in it. And so if one wants to approach these pieces with the enlarged forces and a certain kind of soloistic singing borrowed from 19th century opera and ideals of big instrumental ensembles, again drawn from the 19th and early 20th century, and to follow these pieces for their drama and their portrayal of the characters and interlocutors in the passion story, you can experience them that way. And I think these pieces turn out to be so adaptable that you can listen to them in every way, from an 18th century way of thinking about what it meant to perform a piece like this and imagining what it is that a congregation and a listener might get out of it, from a modern listener who approaches it from a completely different aesthetic point of view and probably cultural and religious point of view. And there's something about these pieces that have made them so adaptable. Do I think they're objectively great compositions? Yeah, I guess to the extent that you can make that claim about anything, yeah, I suppose they are, but they have proved particularly adaptable and are there for people to enjoy. Well, that's a pretty non-18th century position right there. There were all kinds of reasons why listening to Passion was not for enjoyment. Martin Luther and 18th century theologians had very specific ideas about what you were supposed to get out of listening to a musical Passion setting. But people can enjoy them for all kinds of reasons. And I think probably if you look at repertory from a little bit earlier Passion settings, they have not gripped modern listeners the way Bach have continued to.
There's an ever-growing body of recordings of the St. Matthew and the St. John Passions. These reflect, as you just pointed out, different performance practices and interpretive solutions. Arthur Schnabel said that a great work of music is one which allows for more than one interpretation. You might be hesitant about recommending particular recordings. Do you have any advice in picking recordings of Bach's Passions?
I mean, listen to one you like. I mean, that I'll say a little bit more, but there's no right way to perform this music or listen to it. You have to decide what speaks to you and what you want to get out of it and what you want to know about. I have spent a lot of time in my research and in my music making thinking about what it meant to hear these passions in Bach's time, even especially under his direction. And that's involved a number of different approaches. I come down wanting, for the most part, to hear performances that take seriously the kinds of performing forces that Bach used, but also keeps in mind the way those forces were thought about, what the relationship between a bass singer and the role of Jesus is, which might seem obvious if your model is opera, but turns out to be really complicated and was very different in the 18th century. I like that sound also of ensembles of that size. And we're talking for a performance of the John Passion of a band of about 17 or 18 players and eight vocalists plus a couple of more who sing a couple of lines. that's a much smaller ensemble than somebody who is looking for a warm, modern, larger choral sound or an orchestral sound or soloist trained in certain singing traditions or performances performed not in German but in other languages or performances that try to deal with the very problematic anti-Judaic posture of John's narration of the Passion story. There's something for everybody, and my recommendation is find something that speaks to you for on whatever level. The only problem I have is not with any particular performance, but with performances that make particular kinds of claims. And it almost always boils down to a claim that we are doing it this way because we understand what the composer was really after, and this gets to it. That's a part of a long tradition of invoking the authority of a long dead composer to support something that's really one's own aesthetic preference or the result of an inheritance of centuries of performance. I have nothing against those performances. What gets my hackles up is people then trying to enlist Bach's authority or to make statements. Well, what Bach is doing here, where here is some phenomenon that you get when you perform it in a way very different than it would have been performed in the 18th century. But what Bach is doing here is the following. Well, no, Bach is not doing that. You are taking Bach notes and words and doing something, and it might be terrific, or it might be moving or beautiful or inspiring, but it isn't what Bach is doing. So find a performance you like.
Without recommending, just on a more personal note, are there a couple of recordings you come back to most?
Yeah, I'll mention a couple of recordings that I come back to repeatedly. For the St. Matthew Passion, there are so many things I like about the recording directed by John Butt and performed with the Dunedin consort. One of the reasons I like this is that Butt, who is himself an accomplished Bach scholar, was really interested in taking Bach's very particular way of performing that piece as his starting point. And I think it leads to ear-opening results. Along the same lines, there is an older recording of the St. John Passion directed by Ken Slovic with the Smithsonian Players, which was one of the first to use commercial recordings to use Bach-sized forces, but also to record movements that are particular to later versions of the Passion so that one can hear those as well. I like both of those performances as well as appreciating the approaches they took to them.
And the first book is your own, Hearing Bach's Passions. Besides discovering a range of scholarship on Bach's Passions, you argue that modern performances and listeners are radically different from those of Bach's days, as you've already mentioned. Do you believe that we can come closer to the original meaning of the works by changing how we perform and listen to them?
I'd like to think so. It's not a goal we're ever going to reach of figuring out what these pieces mean or meant. But there's all kinds of ways in which we can get a little bit closer to 18th century ways of thinking about the pieces and then maybe equipped with the right knowledge and the right approaches, understand how the piece might have generated meaning in its own time. I'll give an example, and this is an example that I write about extensively in the book, in a way, by the way, that is aimed at general readers. The modern way of performing Bach's Passions involves a good-sized orchestra and a good-sized chorus and a set of soloists. And the role of the vocal soloists in the chorus tends to be entirely distinct. The chorus sings the chorus numbers, and the soloists sing only the solo numbers or the solo lines of individual characters in the narrative. For example, the words of Jesus, which are assigned, as was an 18th century convention, to a bass singer. It makes a very different impression in a modern performance when the words of Jesus are sung by a vocally trained, resonant voiced bass who sings nothing else the entire evening, and then after the moment of narration of Jesus's death, remains silent for the entire rest of the performance. That's very different from what happened in Bach's time, because there was one principal bass singer who sang everything, with one tiny exception, in the bass range. So that means the bass line of choruses and chorales, and the bass line of gospel narrative choruses, including the groups and Jesus's antagonists, but also the bass arias, including one that occurs after Jesus has died. The music is operatic, but this isn't clearly not, in Bach's performances, a one-to-one correspondence, an identification of a particular singer with the person of Jesus. And that arguably is what's suggested by a modern performance in which you hire a singer whose job is to do nothing but sing the words of Jesus and remain silent the rest of the time. And then you add a large chorus of antagonists of Jesus who appear over the course of both passion narratives, that it can seem that you have a very large group opposed to this one person, which represents the meaning of the passion story as it was meant to be heard in the 18th century. Obviously, there's some degree of religious and theological truth in both of those, but the mechanism by which it conveys to the listener, to the congregant, the nature and problem of the problems of the passion story, of the passion narrative, are completely different. So the more you know about how these pieces were performed in Bach's time, the more you can ask, how are these pieces communicating meaning? And I think in many cases, it's really very different then and now.
Thank you for listening. To read or listen to the rest of this interview and gain full access to our archive, visit 5booksforcatholics.com and become a premium subscriber. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and give it a top rating on the platform of your choice. That way, more people can discover it. You can also support the podcast and help us produce more interviews like this one by making a one-off donation via the link given in the show notes. As little as $1, £1, or €1 can help and will be greatly appreciated. Thank you once again, and God bless.